Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight, and by Spotlight Branding, helping to build your internet foundation. I use Daylight as my case management tool. It organizes all my cases, clients, my calendar, to-dos, and emails, all in one app that's with me on my Mac, iPhone, and iPad. I use Daylight on my own, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases, delegate tasks to each other, and see everyone's schedule, all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools I use to stay organized and increase efficiency. Visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight for free for 30 days, and be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. Visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. spotlightbranding.com/TLE, brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to The Law Entrepreneur, episode 59. I'm Neil Tyree, your host, as usual. Today, I have a great guest, somebody that has been on my target list from literally the day we started this podcast. And for one reason or another, we couldn't get together, but we have now. And I'm delighted to have Ernie Svensson, otherwise known as Ernie the Attorney, on our show today. Ernie is a pioneer in the social media and blogosphere and digital marketing for attorneys. He was, as you'll hear, one of the first to have a blog way back in the early 2000s, affectionately known as Ernie the Attorney. It got great traction and was widely read, and frankly was something that I read right from the very beginning of my law practice. And he's groomed that and developed that into a lot larger empire, if you will. He's got many more irons in the fire than just the blog. And so today we're going to talk about how he transitioned from big law to successful solo attorney to blogger to author and to content developer and general all-around smart guy. So really engaging. It was a delight to chat with him, and I hope you get as much value out of this as I did. So without any further delay, let's talk to Ernie Svensson. Hey there, Ernie Svensson. Welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks for having me, Neil. It's great to be here. I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to be with me today. To say that I have been a fan of yours for a long time is quite an understatement. I think, actually, when I first went into solo practice and started looking at the blogosphere for inspiration and ideas how to manage my firm, I have to believe that you were one of the first blogs that I started reading, the Ernie the Attorney blog. So before we get into all that, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and, you know, how you came to be where you are today?
Oh, sure. Okay, so I don't come from a family of lawyers. I was a philosophy major in college, and there weren't a lot of jobs for philosophy majors. And so I aspired to do something that would earn me money besides being a waiter at a fancy restaurant, which is what I was doing between college and law school. So I applied to law school, miraculously got in, miraculously did very well in law school. And so that got me a job with a federal trial judge who said, you know, I had to do a 2-year stint, which was fine. So I learned a lot in 2 years working for him. And then I went to work at a tall building downtown, you know, fancy law firm. And this was in the heyday of the legal boom in the mid 80s. So they paid a lot of money and they gave you a lot of resources and life was really great. And I did that for about 10 years. And I was doing it for a long time. I did it for 18 years, but for 10 years, I was building up to burnout. And after 10 years, I was just becoming more burned out because I liked the firm and I liked the people and I learned a lot, but you know, it just got frustrating, the committee meetings and the high billable hour requirements and the high overhead. And then clients were starting to get picky about their bills and then clients were leaving. And there was all this, you know, pressure that changed. And there was even like some management consultants that they brought in who everybody thought, oh my God, these people are going to fix everything. And they issued a report and everybody thought, you know, well, what's going to come next? You know, and then the next thing that happened was the management committee decreed that there would be no more free sodas or popcorn. And then they, you know, staff bonuses were being curtailed as well. And so the tom-tom started beating and I started looking around trying to figure out how to punch out. And fortunately, you know, I had started blogging and some other things that I'm sure we'll talk about. And that gave me the path to go out on my own, which I did in 2006 after Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans. And I did, you know, practiced as a solo, doing the same kind of work, but with a lot less overhead and leveraging technology to make my life easier, make my practice easier to manage, and make basically the same amount of money I made, except working half as hard.
Well, that's always a worthy objective when going solo. It's not always an easily attained achievement, however.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, what area were you practicing in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. Well, when I started the firm, you know, back then they put you in sections and I was assigned to the commercial litigation section, which I liked because, you know, there was different kinds of cases, antitrust cases. There were contract disputes, franchise problems, product liability, you know, big cases with lots of documents, paralegals that just kind of knew what to do and you just stayed out of their way. And you did your lawyer thing, and it was great. But there was a lot of moving parts. It was a lot of depositions in the top, you know, floor of a conference room that held 23 people, and you know, it was very intense and complicated.
So it was big commercial litigation, not mom and pop, stuff. And so when you went solo, did you stay in that space, or did you kind of narrow down to, you know, more manageable type cases?
I did more manageable cases. So those were the top end were the most complicated ones. Then I did have some, which were the ones I actually enjoyed the most, where I could work on the case pretty much by myself with maybe one paralegal. And those cases were the kind of cases that I aspired to take with me or to have when I went out on my own. So I'd started doing a lot of franchise litigation. We represented a lot of big name franchise companies. And so those were the ones I was hoping would go with me when I went solo, because, of course, you know, you never know who's going to go and who isn't. But I kind of figured they might not, but I hope that they did. And surprisingly, all of them did. And so I was able to do those cases where – and I had already figured out how to work on them by myself without the paralegals by using technology. So I knew that if those were the cases I could take with me and work on and get more of, that my practice could work because – those clients didn't care what kind of office I had, so I could work from home at the beginning, and all they cared about was me getting the work done. And since all of my files were paperless, you know, when I left the firm, instead of doing the usual, well, you know, which files you want to have copied, and of course you'll pay for them, and we'll get them to you in a couple of months, I just walked out with my laptop, and that was it. So the transition was really easy, and yeah, I stuck to kind of the smaller type cases, because obviously I couldn't work on an antitrust case with, you know, five paralegals, nor did I want to.
Right. So how long ago was that?
I left in 2006. So it was in 2006 I started my solo practice, and I did that for about 8 to 9 years. So about 3 years ago is when I transitioned away from practicing into full-time helping lawyers, you know, in my same position, the solo and small firm guys, figure out how to connect the dots with technology.
So when you first started, were you in a retail space, or did you work, you know, from home and coffee shops and that kind of thing?
I worked from home, and it was great. My kids had all gone off to college at this point, so there was nobody that was going to walk in and interrupt me. So I had that luxury. You know, I had been thinking about how I did not want to have any overhead that I didn't absolutely need, and I didn't want to sign any long-term contracts. I wanted everything month to month and super low overhead. And so I was obsessive. It was almost a game, like how little can I spend and yet appear to be, for all, you know, intents and purposes to the outside world, as though I am, you know, still kind of the same lawyer. So I had a website. I made a really nice website because I knew how to do that. And where I was actually located, nobody really ever cared about that. So that perception thing had changed. And so it was really just about getting the work done and making the clients feel good. And what was funny was, I was in the midst of kind of this big litigation case for one of the franchise clients, and they were the ones that went with me. And when I went out and I was practicing from my house, basically, you know, we would have to meet for depositions and things like that. You know, before depositions, we would talk about this. And they would come to my house and we would sit in my comfortable, you know, living room, and they loved it. They thought it was the greatest thing in the world because I had a nice house. You know, it wasn't big, but it was modest. But, you know, they would come in. It was totally relaxed. And we would walk, you know, a couple of blocks down to a nice restaurant in New Orleans. And so they loved it. Like, it was actually a benefit to them that I didn't have office space.
Now, have you been doing, you know, criminal defense? That might not have been the way to go.
No. You don't want those folks coming to your house.
But exactly.
Well, some of them. I mean, most of them, you know.
But now, it's interesting because I think in 2006 was right about the time that, you know, the ramp to paperless offices and office automation became so much more accessible and accelerated that you were right at the beginning of that stage. You know, now I think is a viable option for just about anybody. But back in 2006, you had to have a little bit of a, you know, a unique skill in terms of what other people had at the time. So this was an opportune time for you to put that kind of technical knowledge to work.
Yeah, I was really lucky. So what happened, and, you know, I consider my life success to be based on the Mr. Magoo principle. I'm just sort of blind. I'm wandering around. I really should, you know, die tragically or have catastrophic failure, but instead, somehow, miraculously, you know, everything works out. And
well, Mr. Magoo always turned around at the edge of the cliff for some reason.
Right. Right. And for me, you know, for me, it was, the first thing was, I had this friend who had a scanning business, and we would play guitar, and we, you know, we like to do music stuff together. And he was like, kind of cutting edge, and he said, "Look, you know, I'm thinking of transitioning away from copying all this paper to scanning things, and you know, you should take advantage of this." And he, you know, convinced me I should try, but my clients wouldn't pay for it. And he said he'd do one for free, and so he did one thing for me for free when I had this small TRO case. This is while I was still at the big firm, and this is like 2000, and he said, "You know, I'll copy all this stuff." So he copies it all, and I'm now reviewing these documents because, you know, it's a TRO hearing. I have 30 days to get ready, and it's in federal court. And so I didn't have time really to rely on the paralegals like I normally would. So I had to do it myself. And he said, "No, you just sit at your computer, hit next page, next page, next page, and look how fast you can review these documents and flag the key ones." And then he showed me the searching capability because he had OCR and everything. And I just stopped. And I remember this was like when I realized that Google could do what Google could do. And I just, like, it took me weeks to process it completely, but I was in shock. I said, obviously, this is the way law is going to be practiced. So he helped me get started, figure out which scanner to get. It was very complicated and had a SCSI port.
Yeah, back in the day.
IT, yeah. I had to hook it up, and the soft, it wasn't clear whether you'd scan a PDF or TIFF. It was the Wild West. But that was in 2000. So by the time 2006 rolled around, the Fujitsu scan snap had come out. It was easy. Everybody knew PDFs were what you would scan to. I had already been scanning all my stuff, so I was ready to walk out of the firm easily with all my stuff. So I was really lucky. Like, I started early because I had a good friend who showed me the secret door, you know, to Nirvana.
And now you're helping show that secret door to others.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. I think it's, you know, I think the practice of law should be, you know, you go to law school and you work really hard and, you know, some people do really well, or, you know, some people do less well, but, you know, you work really hard. And this is, the assumption is that because you worked really hard, things are going to work out because, you know, you've put in all this effort and this investment, and it's not necessarily true. Whether you're in a big firm or a small firm, you know, if you're in a big firm and getting well paid, you can become burned out and miserable. If you're in a small firm, you're going to struggle. But the thing that's going to save you and put your head way above water and take you, you know, into a great place is making things easier to manage and automating anything that's going to make your firm more profitable or reduce profits significantly. And that is technology. The trick is you have to learn how to use it. You know, it's a lottery ticket that you have to buy. You know, you can't just say, well, you know, there's a winning lottery ticket out there somewhere. You do have to actually go buy the lottery ticket.
So, yeah, and it's a skill set that you have to acquire, and you have to invest the time just like you did in law school. But I want to go back to the decision to go solo. I know the drumbeat was pounding at big law, but in the back of your mind, did you always consider yourself a solo practitioner, or that is that something that you aspired to?
I aspired to it, but I did not think I had the ability to do it. I mean, I had no one in my family who had started a small business or that was entrepreneurial. And, you know, I did want to be a lawyer because I watched too much Perry Mason as a young child, and also Matlock. And, you know, the idea of being the scrappy solo lawyer with, you know, freedom to move about and call your own shots and control your destiny, that definitely appealed to me. But I did not see how I would possibly do that. Number one, I didn't know, and when I graduated from law school, I didn't know how to practice law. Number two, I didn't know how to run a business. And number three, I didn't know how to get clients. And really, you know, I was never good at that. Like, I had a summer job trying to sell encyclopedias. I sold one the entire summer, and then they canceled the order. So really, I only sold zero. And I hate networking, not because I don't like people, but I feel like there's not a lot of pay. You spend all this time, you try to meet a bunch of different people and hope that some of them hire you, but most of them won't. And a lot of them, you know, you'll find out you don't really like talking to. And then, you know, you got work to do. And so, like,
I would
rather just do the work. Yeah. And so, but the miracle, again, Mr. Magoo, was when I experimentally decided to try this blog just for laughs, that took off, got me a lot of attention. So, but by the time I was ready to leave the firm, I was already having people contact me and say, hey, I'd really like to hire you, or, you know, and I'd say, well, here's what I charge because the firm has this massive overhead. My billable rates were super high. And I'd say, ah, okay, we can't afford that. But I knew if I left, they could. So I knew I would get new clients, and I knew I had clients that would go with me. And I knew I just couldn't take it anymore. That's really it.
Now, so I think I've read before that you attribute, I think you just said it, that you attribute a lot of your initial success as a solo and your growth as a solo firm to the success of your blog.
Totally.
And I've heard you describe it before, again, as something of the Mr. Magoo moment, that you started doing it as a lark or just for fun. But what was the key to the success?
Well, you know, I wouldn't have been able to answer that question in the beginning when it was giving me benefits, but I can say what it is now, because when I was Mr. Magoo and I was blind and I didn't know how marketing actually worked, I thought, well, it was just, you know, I was the first person. Well, this is true. I was the fifth lawyer blogger, apparently. So when you're the fifth lawyer blogger,
You stand out.
You stand out, right? And then it was like, it's like getting the first seats at a stadium concert with a popular band, you know, 2 years before the concert starts or 5 years before it starts. You know, you're just sitting there by yourself going, well, you know, I don't know. Maybe there's a concert going to come. And all of a sudden there's a concert and people go, wow, how'd you get these front row seats? Well, I got there early by accident. But the success wasn't simply that. Like, and that I would have said that was a success, but the success was I wasn't trying to market. I was just having a conversation and giving people information and just establishing relationships, which, as it turns out, is actually the thing that works well for marketing. So what I thought marketing and sales was and hated is not actually the effective way to do it. It's the way that the cheesy, aggressive used car salesman type of people do it, or, you know, the people who are suave and debonair and can walk into a room and, you know, charm everybody, you know, if you want to make it less about the cheesy salesperson. But the process is still the same. You're going around and you're trying to be charming and get something out of people, maybe not so overtly, but what actually works better is just helping people without expectation of reward and just giving them good information. Miraculously, that's actually the best kind of marketing.
So what did you write about? Interested you at back then?
Well, in the beginning, since no lawyers were online and I picked this name, Ernie the Attorney, the other four lawyers weren't obviously, you know, lawyers to as many people, but I was. And so people would contact me and say, hey, you know, there's this new Supreme Court ruling, or, hey, there's this thing going on. What do you think about this? And here again was the thing that I did that a lot of lawyers wouldn't have done, but my personality was like, oh, I'll just, you know, I'll talk about it. That's fine. I may not be an expert in, let's say, First Amendment law the way Floyd Abrams is, but, you know, Floyd Abrams doesn't have a blog and they're asking me, so I'll talk about it. Sure. And I would say, you know, here's my gut, here's how it kind of works. But because I wasn't trying to get into the high level stuff and footnote it with everything and create a law review article, I could be free to say, as you know, things quickly and have them be substantially what people wanted to hear. They didn't want a law review article. They just wanted a simple take on it. Then reporters started contacting me, and same thing. And then the ABA asked me to come speak at Tech Show because they thought I was a legal marketing expert. So just by kind of talking and having conversations, all these connections just started happening.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. As I mentioned, I use Daylight as my case management tool, as it organizes all my cases, clients, my calendar, to-dos, emails, all in one app. And it's with me everywhere because it's on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. If I get a call from a client when I'm out of the office, I can quickly pull up the details of the case on my iPhone and then jot down some notes after the call, and it's all organized in Daylight. I use Daylight by myself on my own, but you can also use it in a team. You can track the status of cases, delegate tasks between one another, and check everyone's calendars, all without having to interrupt anyone or dig through papers. It really streams your workflow so you can work more efficiently. Managing email is a big part of how Daylight helps me. It integrates with Apple Mail, so as I'm going through my emails, I can just click and save emails to a client or to a case. That way, when I'm looking at the case details, I can see a history of all the emails with the client or any notes that I've taken and follow-ups with them all in one spot. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. In addition, I want to tell you about my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They build a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. And this helps me generate more referrals and more business for my firm. Their services are designed to help lawyers get better results out of the resources they're already investing into marketing and business development. They create an internet foundation that makes all of your marketing work better. That's because these days, almost every potential client is going to check out your web presence before they hire you. It's important that you create a strong first impression. And that's what Spotlight Branding has done for me, and they can do it for you too. So visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for our podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE. You know, one of the things that people ask me about in terms of blogging, what have I heard from the guests that do blogging as a central part of their practice, is should I write about the law or should I write about the problems that my clients need solutions for? You know, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. It depends on what your practice is.
Right.
You know, if your practice is family law, I think you want to write about the problems that your clients face so that they can identify with what you know how to solve. But if you're doing something that has more to do on the cutting edge of legal precedents, well, then you're writing more for other attorneys and people who are interested in the legal outcome of your discussion.
Right. Well, you know, so the thing, again, this is like, now that I've gone back and studied marketing, I have a framework to put things into, and I can say, okay, this is what you should do, and this is why you should do it this way. And so the answer is, obviously, you need to talk about the law and demonstrate that you have authority, because that's a buzzword. You know, people need to know your stuff, and that's what authority is, and that's a psychological trigger. Like, they're going to be reluctant to hire a lawyer who they don't perceive knows a lot about that area. Or as between this lawyer who seems to know a lot and this one who I'm not sure, they're going to go with the one who knows a lot. So you definitely need to be signaling that you know about your practice area. However, you also need to establish empathy. And empathy is letting people know that you understand their perspective. So when we go to a physician, you know, we know the physician knows their stuff, but we want them to also have good bedside manner. And for lawyers, that's also important. And that's what empathy is. And empathy is kind of like that saying that, you know, nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. You need to show that you care. And so, like, for a divorce lawyer, let's say, obviously you're going to write about, you know, the law related to getting a divorce. But you also want to demonstrate you know what it's like to go through a divorce. And even more than that, like, there are lawyers who have blogs who do divorce law, and I can't remember if this was Lee Rosen who does Divorce Discourse, who, if you're a divorce lawyer, I highly recommend you check out his blog. He's a North Carolina lawyer.
Also has a great podcast.
Great podcast, great guy, very innovative. You know, he's definitely somebody folks should follow. But I think it was Lee who I used to follow in the early days. He would write articles and say, how to have a happy marriage. Now, you know, is that going to help you get more business? Yes, because people want to know, if I go to this lawyer, what sort of person are they, right? And Dan Kennedy is one of the marketing geniuses that I've studied, and I'll recommend his book later. But, you know, he said something that stuck with me. He said, you know, everybody gets that you do whatever the hell it is you do for money. But people want to know, besides the money, why do you do it, right? What's your mission? And so when Lee Rosen says, I want you to have a happy marriage, he's saying, or if anybody says that, they're saying, I want you guys to be happy. Now, if you're not, then, you know, I'll help you get through that and try to make it as, you know, frictionless and you know, least painful as possible. But I'm not here just to collect money. I'm here to try to help you guys in your life. If that's your message, you know, it needs to be, you know, projected through other things rather than simply saying it, because if you simply say it, people will believe it. That's how you establish empathy. Now, if you don't believe that, you can try to fake it, but it's not going to come across. It's not going to work. But the problem is, most good lawyers that I run across are actually empathetic, hardworking lawyers. The problem is they sort of, you know, hold back and or focus only on the authority part because they think that's what they're supposed to do. And hey, that's what I thought I was supposed to do too. But it turns out people need to know more than just that you know your stuff. They want to know you care.
Now, are you still blogging as much as you used to? I know you've gone on to some other writing adventures.
No, not really. I mean, first of all, I went on a blog, a palooza. I started creating a bunch of blogs. And so it became harder and harder to write for all of them. And so I've tried to consolidate them down. I mean, the original blog, the Ernie the Attorney one, is still out there. But I've turned that into more just kind of my personal observations, which are few and far between, because I don't really feel like, you know, the world is waiting for me to, you know, to say anything. And besides, the things I think that are worth saying have been said, you know, and have for 2,000 years, you know, and so I simply point those things out. You know, what the latest shiny object thing is, or whether the robot lawyers are coming, you know, to make our world better, that stuff I don't care about, because there's lots of people talking about that. So I have a blog for each one of the, you know, my company sites, but those I write, you know, really just articles that are practical and hopefully evergreen or long lasting and not just, you know, a flash in the pan type stuff. And those take longer to create, but they have longer lasting value. So I don't write as much.
Now, obviously, technology has played a huge role in your success as a solo practitioner and now moving on to other ventures. What is the key in terms of using technology as you see it?
To be very systematic. If you're haphazard about it, which most people are, and which I have been and started out being that way because I didn't know, I just said, oh, there's technology here. Well, let me try this. Let me try that. And, you know, I have a high tolerance for playing around with things. I mean, I like to check things out, and I'm good at learning things quickly and figuring out what the best options are. I pay a price for that, but, you know, I don't pay as much of a price as other people do. So don't do that. Yeah, right. Find people who've already done it. And that's why I said, like, Lee Rosen, for example, has done that. So follow Lee Rosen or follow Michael Hyatt, who's not a lawyer, but, you know, he's methodical and he's a business guy. Find people who've done it, who you can tell are systematic. And if they have a system that they'll make available to you, get the system and follow it. Because if you don't, you know, you're going to be all over the place and it's going to cost you more. It's going to be more frustrating. You're going to have more. You can hit more landmines and fall into quicksand more often than if you have a system.
Now, you know, most of our listeners know that I'm a devoted Apple guy, but I will tell you that beyond the Apple universe, the single greatest piece of technology that I use in my practice, you mentioned it already, was the Fujitsu ScanSnap. I have the iX500, which to me is like the desktop granddaddy of them all. So if you aspire to a paperless life, I would think that the scanner is kind of the key to the whole thing.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, the ScanSnap has been around for like over 10 years. And when that thing showed up, that was the holy grail. It had one button. It was clear where you put the paper. You could stack in 50 of them at a time. And you pushed the button and the magic happened. The software it came with was awesome. And it just kept selling like hotcakes. And as somebody who had tried one of the earlier Fujitsus, which wasn't built for the consumer because my friend with the scanning company set it up for me and I saw the headaches, when I saw this, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like, you know, the Apple computer appearing, you know, after the IBM world. And so it's the same thing. It's just gotten better. There are now other scanners that you could get, like the Neat Receipts is one. Do not get those other scanners. I mean, you can try, but again, this is where if you go try that, you're not following the script that the people who have systems will tell you to follow. Lee Rosen, what does he use? The ScanSnap. Everybody at Tech Show, ScanSnap. You use the ScanSnap. David Sparks uses the ScanSnap. Everybody uses the ScanSnap. There's a reason for this, because it is the obvious, clear, it is the secretariat running 31 lengths ahead of the field at the Belmont Stakes. There are other scanners out there, but why would you want to play around with them? The software is great. So yes, the scanner is definitely a key component. There's some other things. And, you know, if people want to get the script, I mean, I've written it out. I have a 10-part, you know, free email thing where you just go to paperlesschase.com, click on the button at the top right that says, give me the 5 keys, and I'll, you know, give you the link to the ScanSnap scanner article I wrote, which will explain all this stuff. You'll hear from other lawyers. But the ScanSnap scanner is what you want as the scanner. And then there's, you know, a few other things you want, but that's the key number one.
Well, I wanted to use that as the segue to go into the next stage of your life here. I don't know if it was the ScanSnap that caused you to make that leap, but at some point it became clear that you had a lot to offer other attorneys in terms of how to set up a solo practice and how to leverage their practice using technology. So talk to us a little bit how now you've transitioned away from actually practicing law into this new venture.
Yeah, so it happened, again, Mr. Magoo style. I wasn't really looking to do this. I just kept getting invited to more and more solo and small firm conferences or the ABA Tech Show. And so I would meet a lot of lawyers and say, wow, that was really great. And then I'd meet him a couple of years later and say, that really helped me. And so I enjoyed that a lot because I like helping people. And, you know, that's why I like practicing law. But I like helping lawyers because I feel like that's helping them and it's also helping the practice law. So I did it more and more. Then people started paying me to do it, which was nice. But then trying to balance, you know, this side gig with the actual practice of law, which was litigation, which, you know, is very unpredictable and can be chaotic, was too hard. And so my kids had gone off to college and I said, okay, well, I could try to make this work and it looks like it could happen. I definitely want it to work. So I just said, okay, I'm all in. I'm just going to try this. And I did. And I set up this website, paperlesschase.com, and started teaching lawyers about being paperless. And that got great feedback. And then I was doing these conferences every year in New Orleans and people would come and people started coming from outside New Orleans. And, you know, so I just saw that there was this huge need and I liked filling it. So then I stopped practicing law completely about 2 years, 2.5, 3 years ago. And so now all I do is just have these websites and do a conference once a year and try to help solo and small firm lawyers, you know, move forward. And I try to teach them systems because, you know, that's important.
So the conference is, you're doing it annually now?
I had been doing it annually. So that was another little experiment where I started doing this conference in New Orleans at the end of the year, because in Louisiana, you have to get all your CLE by December 31st. So lawyers are running around like zombies trying to get their CLE. And it was really easy for me to market to a certain group using my blog. Yeah, I had my blog, and so I could get a certain amount of attention. And so I said, well, let me try this and see if I can run my own conference. Because I got dismayed by, like, I would get invited to a conference to speak about paperless, let's say. And then the other two people would be talking about ERISA benefit stuff and immigration law. And I was like, well, if you want to learn about paperless, it's more than one session, you know? And I didn't control that. So I decided to try to control it. So I did my own seminars, and they were good. People loved them, and they kept growing. And then when I went out on my own, you know, not practicing law anymore, I wanted to get more people and I needed to know that it was going to work. And so that's what really when I had to start studying marketing, because now just being the fifth lawyer blogger didn't really work. And so now I do these seminars once a year. I'm about to do one May 18th and 19th in New Orleans, which is Thursday, Friday. And I'm doing it with Brett Burney, who I know you've interviewed. Brett's a great guy, and he's an ABA Tech Show former chair and knows a lot about technology. So it kind of like what these conferences are is like a mini tech show, except it's totally focused on solo and small firm lawyers, and it's totally just the practical stuff, no shiny objects or gadgetry, just for the sake of gadgetry. And I'm fortunate enough to be able to lure in really top-notch national speakers. So this year, you know, it's going to be the best one ever for that reason. Plus, I created this online course about a year ago because I saw that even if you can do these conferences, after 2 days, people go back to their practice and they don't keep up or they need people to follow up with them. And so the online course is part of the conference. You sign up, you get the online course immediately so you can start preparing for the conference. We do webinars before the conference to get people acclimated and, you know, ramped up. Then after the conference, we do webinars. And so it's really more than 2 days. And that's really kind of in a nutshell what I'm doing. It looks like a 2-day conference, but it's really much more.
That's really an interesting proposition because I don't know a whole lot of folks who are bundling all those types of delivery vehicles into, you know, one focused presentation.
I don't know anyone in the legal profession that's doing it.
No. So you're talking about a in-person seminar, multiple webinars, and an online course all rolled into one.
Right.
There's a lot of value in that, Ernie.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, the value to me is knowing that, because when I did the online course, I wasn't sure how that would be received. And I'm like, well, is this going to work for people? How is it going to work? And I was kind of feeling my way. And, you know, I figured it would be useful to some extent. But The registration numbers were like more than double what I expected. People were really happy. I learned a lot. I've, you know, improved it. I'm still improving it. But what's really great is those folks who were in the online course were also in a private Facebook group. They kind of get to know each other. And I made the registration open first to the folks in the online course, and like 20 of them signed up. So there's going to be 20 people who had the online course who are coming to this event. They kind of already know each other. Then they show, and they already know the speakers, basically, because the speakers presented a lot of the lectures. And then they show up, and they're going to meet some of the folks that they already knew from the Facebook group and from the course. And then they get to know each other even better. They'll meet some new folks. Those folks have the online course, because anybody who signs up, you know, the online course is just part of the equation. I'm not, there's no, you can't buy the ticket to the live event without the online course. I mean,
and vice versa.
Yeah, it comes with the online course. And if you get the online course, you have the opportunity to come to the live event. You don't have to. But so not everybody took the online course is coming, but a good number are, and it's going to be really great.
You know, that's great. I mean, you build this community, and that's one of the things I like about Victor Medina's event down in Florida that we've talked about so many times on this podcast, that you go back there as much to see everybody that you met the year before as to get the technical knowledge offered by the conference. And it sounds like this is the same thing that's developing here with your conference, that people are going to be coming back annually because they enjoy the relationships that they've developed in the previous event.
Yeah, and I haven't been to Victor's thing, but that's another one that people should go to. If you're a Mac using lawyer, you should go to Milo Fest. You know, that's a great community of people that are going to help support your practice as a Mac using lawyer, and they're going to teach you more than just about Macs, as you well know. I have not been there for various reasons; it just hasn't worked out for me. But I will definitely go one year because it's in Orlando, it's near Disney World, and it's great people. So, you know, definitely, folks should check out Milo Fest.
Of course, we were there in a hurricane this last time.
So that's right.
That was exciting. Tell us a little bit, like what are you covering in the live event?
So the live event. So what I've kind of come up with, and the online course helped me kind of map this out, is that there's a progression in as far as I see it, of 12 steps you have to go through to evolve your practice so that it's super easy to manage because you're taking advantage of automation and outsourcing, and that it's profitable because you know how to market it and take advantage of online things like the web and social media and, you know, gathering traffic. So I can't teach all those 12 things in 2 days, but that's what the online course does. So the 2 days at the event are going to be either things that build off of lessons that are already in the course, or that build off the webinars that we're going to do leading up to the event, which will be recorded and put into the online course. And then we're going to do like workshop hands-on kind of things. So for example, like text automation and being able to quickly create, you know, text documents, snippets, whatever is, you know, universally applicable to every lawyer, right? And so Text Expander, I'm sure you use it, I love it, right? Brett Burney is a wizard at teaching people how to use Text Expander. Text Expander is now something that if you're a Windows user, you can use. So it doesn't matter whether you're Mac or Windows, every lawyer should at least check out Text Expander, because every lawyer I know, it's like the scan snap. Every lawyer I know who's checked it out has said, oh my God, this is the most amazing thing in the world. But the problem is getting up and running with it can be intimidating, particularly for those lawyers who aren't, you know, obsessed with kind of figuring stuff out on their own. So the online course has a lesson where Brett Burney explains Text Expander, goes through it, teaches you how to do some basic stuff. At the live event, bring your computer, have your Text Expander up and running, because we're going to get ideas from other people that are there. We're going to tell you what snippets to use. We're going to share them. We're going to build up your library of snippets and show you while you're there, because that's something that can best be done in a live event. So that's an example. There's going to be workshops. Same thing with marketing, like figuring out how do you, you know, message online, you know, how do you onboard potential clients, how do you build trust online, all that kind of stuff. We're going to cover that not just in theory and not just with preliminary stuff, but say, okay, let's open up LinkedIn. Let's you know, create a LinkedIn profile so that people who come across your LinkedIn bio will say, damn, that's a lawyer I want to hire. I can see what they know. I can see that they care. I want to hire that person. What kind of words do you need to put into your bio at LinkedIn? Well, we're going to sit there and we're going to do it.
Will you be having any vendors in attendance?
We have three sponsors, and the sponsors. So I'm a huge fan of the idea of not having this walled garden where, you know, the sponsors are kept down in steerage, you know, and they can't speak, and you can go see them, you know, but they're behind cages, you know, like, and you can touch them, but they can't get out of their cage. I don't like that. Like, if I'm not willing to have the sponsor come and be in the same room, then I don't trust them enough. And so I have three sponsors. And the sponsors do not provide any revenue. They just help make the experience better by paying for lunch. So, you know, the lunches are covered both days. Breakfast is covered in the morning. And there's a cocktail reception after the first day. And the sponsors are folks like Ruby Receptionist, another one who, like, who else does what Ruby does as well as they do? I've been recommending them for years, you know, whether they were, you know, a sponsor or not. So fortunately, they were eager to join. And so they're going to be there. And so the sponsors are folks like that, you know, folks who I know, I like their products. They're good products. The people are good people. I trust them. And I'm, you know, I say to other people, you should trust them or at least check them out.
Well, we've talked all around it. Tell our listeners, how can they get on board? How can they attend?
They can go to smallfirmbootcamp.com. And I will have a blog post up by the time this podcast is live. And you just go to the articles area, which will either be in the nav bar in the top right or at the bottom, because I'm changing the website. So it may be at the bottom, but it'll say articles. It's the blog. You click on that and read the article. It says, you know, woo, small firm boot camp coming. And there will be a place to sign up. And, you know, the thing I've learned about marketing is you have to get people to commit sooner rather than later. So the pricing is lower the sooner you opt in. There's no risk to opting in sooner under the fear that, oh my God, you know, what if I have to cancel? What if I have a trial? Because we give people all their money back if they can't come for any reason. And in fact, we even will give you your money back if you come and spend 2 days there and think it's not the best thing you've ever seen. Because if it's not, well, then I don't want your money. But I'm pretty sure everybody will be happy. And I want to make it as easy and frictionless for people to decide to come and to come. So that's how it works.
All right. Well, we'll put that in the show notes, and I'll point out that I've never been to New Orleans, and I've Ooh. Always been looking for an excuse. And this just might very well be my best excuse to come to New Orleans.
For those who haven't, and several people haven't, I specifically picked this weekend because, so it's Thursday, Friday, and then on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, there's a music festival called Bayou Boogaloo. And so for people who want to hear good New Orleans music all in one place, it's outdoors, it'll be good weather, good food, crafts, all that good stuff. But it's not like the full-blown thing like Jazz Fest, which is super expensive and very difficult. It's right next to this bayou in the city where people bring out their watercraft and their dogs, and it's kind of crazy. It's kind of like Burning Man on the water. So if you haven't been to New Orleans and you want to come for the first time, this is the time you want to come, and you want to stay until Monday, or at least till Sunday.
You're hitting me in my weak spot. You know, food, alcohol, and music.
So. We'll show you around. It will show you around. We'll all be at Bayou Boogaloo together after the conference.
That'll be awesome. Well, Ernie, thank you ever so much for taking the time to be on the show today. I'm sure that the folks who have listened to you are now inspired. I hope that if they're so inclined, they do take you up on the offer to come to the Small Firm Boot Camp on May 18th and 19th. And like I said, I think I may see you there.
Good. Well, it's going to be epic. We're going to have a great time. And you know Brett Burney, so you know how much fun he is. And so,
I know all those folks, so it'll be great. So, all right. Thanks ever so much, Ernie. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care, Neil. Good talking to you. Take care.
Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days, and be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.